Crafting messaging for multiple and diverse audiences can be challenging. How do spaces that are neighborhoods, shopping hubs, and places that are associated with art, luxury, and premium lifestyle make sense of customer data to craft unique messaging? Dinyuko Makeza, the executive head of marketing at the V&A Waterfront, joins me to unpack some of the ways that they communicate with and appeal to multiple audiences. She was in senior marketing roles at Standard Bank, Hollard, and SAB. We talk about how they create messaging that resonates across different audiences, stakeholders, and partners.
Our responsibility is to attract people to the precinct. Our mandate is how do people feel when they come to the waterfront? But also, data is important from the perspective of us as an attraction and as a neighborhood that is an extension of the city of Cape Town, because then we have to measure how responsible are we as an extension of the city.
We discussed the role of collaboration in their work. She lets us in on how they remain relevant to their local and international partners.
I like to think that by virtue of us collaborating with this partner, they need to walk away from the project feeling fulfilled, feeling respected, and that they actually got some value out of it in addition to the financial.
This is The Lead Creative.
Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show and please share and subscribe.
Dinyuko, thank you very much for joining us this morning. It's a great pleasure to have you on the show with us.
It's an absolute privilege to be invited on The Lead Creative. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. Firstly, Dinyuko, congratulations on being one of the top five marketers in the 2022 Marketing Achievement Awards. It's a really huge achievement for 4 years of work that you've put in to the V&A Waterfront with your team.
Thank you so much for that. And I mean, you know, that kind of recognition and validation is just incredible. I see us as marketers, we are channels for our brands. And as you know, brands are business. So this recognition is symbolic of all the work that myself with my team, as well as the whole waterfront community, has been doing over the last 4 years. So it is the collective recognition that I'm most proud of. So thanks for that.
Just thinking back, when did you know that you wanted to be a marketer, that this was the thing for you?
Oh my gosh. Believe it or not, as far back as Standard 9, I think they call it grade 11, so I'm totally giving away my age. I knew as far back as then that this is probably something I want to get into. I discovered the concept of marketing as a concept. I mean, obviously, you know, you grow up watching TV, you see advertisements, you're like, that's pretty cool. But that there was actually a discipline that focuses on business and strategy and creativity and words and pictures just really appealed to me. And we used to have a subject called business economics. I don't know what that is in more contemporary terms, but as an older millennial, it was called business economics. And that's when I discovered marketing. I was always quite a creatively inclined kid. And if I had not gotten into marketing, I probably would have pursued something in the arts or something creative anyway. So this was a nice balance. Marketing was a nice balance between like that cerebral, cognitive kind of business orientated world with the conceptual, big picture, like curious space that I like to play in. And it made my family really happy that I was pursuing a BCom degree. So that then it was sealed. It was completely sealed.
No, thanks for that. So one of the things that distinguishes the V&A, unlike many other places, is that the V&A is not just a shopping hub. It's also a neighborhood. It's a waterfront. It's one of the sort of big properties in Cape Town. And of course, you appeal to an international audience, you appeal to a local audience. There's a sustainability aspect to it, right? So how have you made the shift from, you know, from being in the in banking and FMCG to now being in this space where there's so much happening, so many moving parts and so many people to communicate with?
Sure. Is this my shift on a personal level, like on a personal professional
level? Yeah,
level?
I think let's start on a personal professional level, and then of course into then the thinking that then inspired everything else that came in afterwards.
Right. Much like most marketers, or at least those that are grounded on like classical strategic marketing, I started my career in FMCG, specifically at the South African Breweries, as you mentioned earlier in the intro. And there I really learned the foundations of classical marketing. As opposed to continuing my career in that FMCG stream and maybe moving into telecoms, I took what I considered for myself, because I am someone who, I'm not a big risk taker, but it was a risky for me. I took a leap of faith and went into a completely different industry, which was insurance. And there I thought, you know, I would come across the same type of, I'm going to call it slow burn, labor of love type of brand building and brand marketing. But insurance does have an element of that, but the business unit I was in was very much revenue orientated. So we focused a lot on direct marketing that allows you to know almost immediately whether or not your interventions are working. And that was like, for someone who's coming from like, I'm building this brand, Sarita, from scratch. It's about women, you know, like it's that labor of love to, we have 500,000 Rand. We've got to make an infomercial. Actually, it's not just one infomercial. With 500,000, we need four different iterations of it. Once you put it out there into the public realm, you will know within the next 10 minutes whether or not that infomercial is working, because there's a direct number. It really catapulted me into the appreciation of performance-based marketing and analysis. It helped that I did come from a research background at SAB. I started in the research department, but it was still kind of a shock. But there's also something really cool about knowing almost immediately whether your work has return on investment. Like immediately, are the leads coming in? You will know. And if they are not, how are you going to course correct? And you have to course correct within the hour, whatever that means. Whether it be changing up creative, et cetera. So that already kind of primed me to the ability to plug and play in different industries and apply the foundational work that I'd learned and the capability and the principles that I'd learned and had been crafted I'd been conditioned to appreciate about brand building in that high-paced performance-based space. So when I took another leap of faith and, well, I stayed within financial services but went into banking, I wasn't as shocked by the fact that there are actually organizations that are not marketing-facing, nor are they necessarily consumer-facing. At SAB, we used to talk about being the term was consumer-facing and marketing-led. Like the strategy for the business was crafted and incubated within marketing, and marketing was at the center of the business. But what I've also found is that those are exceptions. Most businesses are not necessarily marketing led, and that's not a bad thing. Like in insurance, the actuaries kind of draft and craft product strategies, and marketing is an enabling function. And I found that to be the case in both financial institutions. Doesn't mean that you don't create impact, just means that you have to be more collaborative and resourceful. And so the shift from those two industries into an industry that I knew very little about, and this is where the complexity of the waterfront comes in. Because on one hand, we are a property development company. On the other hand, we are a public space. Yes, we are privately owned, but we're a public space, a neighborhood, if you will. On the other hand, we're an attraction. And by virtue of being an attraction, that means we attract people to come in and experience the space, whether it's someone who is locally based from Alsace River or someone who is from Paris. We're an attraction within the city. And if you look at the waterfront from those three streams, that's where things get really, really interesting. And you have to kind of wear multiple hats to speak to different audiences and create compelling propositions.
I mean, I think you mentioned on a number of things that I want to touch on. I think the collaboration bit is a major one, of course, and that's very evident in the work that you do. But I'll get back to that. Coming from sort of the financial services sector into, call it FMCG or, you know, into SAB, there's a lot of underlying data that you mentioned there, one from the numbers that you see in an infomercial to how effective your marketing is from an SAB perspective, for instance. So I get a sense that data played an important role there. How much of that sort of data and analysis of that data to craft messaging plays a role now with the V&A where you are?
You, as they say, data is king, and in our world, data is information, it's knowledge, it's insights. It comes in both like hardcore numbers that determine, are people actually coming back to the waterfront? Particularly, you know, that was a massive key performance indicator for us, the ability to measure footfall, because our responsibility as a landlord to our tenants is to attract people to the precinct, right? That's from a property development perspective. Our mandate from a neighborhood perspective is, how do people feel when they come to the waterfront? So measuring that is incredible. But also beyond that is, even as a landlord, there's an element of having to measure the extent to which the community, i.e. the tenant community, are satisfied, having chosen this as the location to start their business, to have their offices, to drive a value proposition for their staff members, because location is a big part of employee satisfaction. And then lastly, data is important from the perspective of us as an attraction and as a neighborhood that is an extension of the city of Cape Town, because then we have to measure, how responsible are we as an extension of the city? How are we influencing and impacting job creation, which is a key component and important part of our mix? How are we developing in a sustainable, responsible, and ethical way? How are we supporting the arts and local artistic and design communities? How are we supporting in terms of skills development? So these are all things that, if the only way you'll know how you are achieving that is if you measure it, if you ask the question, if you keep if you keep your finger on the pulse of all those multiple different dimensions. The last thing I want to say on stakeholders and measurements is, as an extension of the city, a privately owned but public managed space, we are also custodians of the ocean, and we are on a global stage. So stakeholder engagement within the city, with local government, with local tourism authorities, is also important. And our ability to measure the satisfaction with us as a stakeholder in the city, like, are we a stakeholder within the city that is making a difference, but that's wonderful and positive to collaborate with, is also something that we measure.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
How do all these moving parts, because, I mean, of course, there's, you know, data and touch points at every aspect of this journey. How do these moving parts and all of this information then come back, you know, to be into how you craft your messaging for all of these, you know, stakeholders, audiences that you appeal to?
I'm not afraid to, in the spirit of transparency, I'm not afraid to admit that we are, it's a journey. Let me say that. It's a journey. We are in our infancy of understanding the layered approach to the holistic waterfront story that touches all these things, all the things that I've mentioned, that allows us to measure satisfaction across all these stakeholders and dimensions. But we look at data from, I guess, three or four different pillars. We look at it from a business perspective, and from an overall business perspective, we'd obviously look at things like turnover and revenue, et cetera, et cetera. But because we are multiple business units within a business, we measure return on investment across the different business unit streams. So in retail, sales and turnover is important. In hospitality and residential, occupancy is important. In the commercial space, vacancies are important. In the marine space, it's probably more or less a similar KPA. So there's business relevant KPIs that we measure. And I think we've got a good handle on that, given that we have started off and our core business is property development. Then there's a component which is the consumer / customer. And that's where the emotive side of satisfaction we measure. And that looks at like customer experience from a tenant perspective. We've got a good handle on our tenant consumer journeys, whether it is a tenant who has signed the lease or it is a secondary tenant who works here. They have not necessarily signed a lease with the waterfront, but they work here. So we've mapped out their moments of truth in their journey as part of our community. And we're clear on the dimensions that determine whether or not they're satisfied, that determine whether or not we're delivering against our premium, the reason why the waterfront is a premium destination and the value behind being associated with the waterfront. We measure things like, do people feel like they belong? Like, do they feel like they've been treated by this landlord, even though we see ourselves as more than that, as people? Do they feel like they have a voice? Do they feel like we are democratizing information and sharing our strategy and sharing our story? Do they feel like operationally we're resolving things for them timeously and communicating? So those are some of the dimensions that we measure, and those are periodic, like survey-based triggers that we put out that allow us to test the extent to which we're delivering satisfaction. We also do the same from a consumer perspective. These are people who we call visitors, so people who come to the waterfront to enjoy the number of attractions, to shop, to live, to play. We look at that as well. And the last pillar that we use to determine whether or not we're on the right track, and this is very much in its infancy and is quite contradictory for someone who comes from a brand building perspective. You'd think this was the first thing I did. But anyway, yeah, we're doing it now, is measuring our brand health and determining our way of measuring the health of this brand that is unique and is based on understanding the complexity of the brand, but is anchored on the purpose of the brand, which is to be an inspiring and inclusive neighborhood. So the extent to which we are manifesting that is something that we are starting to build the dashboard or the methodology around.
In very many ways, you and your team are working in a space that you know, doesn't have a template. You know, it's not very much like everything else that we've spoken about. It's not like banking, even though banking is changing, or insurance, even though they are also changing. It's not like, it's not in a way where you say, okay, put an infomercial out and you get X number of signups. Put this out and you do that, right? You play in very many spaces that are sort of unique, that are different, that are not tried and tested across the world. How do you know that we are on track? What do you compare yourselves against besides yourselves, you know?
Oh, these and other questions. Oh my God, these and other questions. It's like you were in the boardroom with us yesterday. So firstly, I just want to like double click on the point that you made earlier about there isn't a holistic and identical best practice on which we can say, oh, we're comparing ourselves. Because there's, honestly, and I'm not saying this because I drank the Kool-Aid, there's nothing like a place like this. Even if you try and compare yourself to other waterfronts in the world, it's just different. We can try and compare ourselves to, from a retail perspective, to absolutely other malls. From a commercial offices perspective, we can benchmark based on other locations, commercial locations. From a hospitality perspective, the same applies. Residential, I mean, we can compare ourselves to the rest of the Atlantic seaboard. But then it's when you add in the other layers and the sum of the parts, then there's really nothing. That presents both a challenge, but it's also so exciting because it means that we can define and craft our way of measuring and communicating in a way that is truly authentic to us, because there's nothing that can, there's nothing comparative at this stage. I mean, they might very well be, and maybe some of the people, if anyone is listening to, will listen to this and is listening to this, they might say, hey, T, consider this, or yeah. So I guess we are marching to the beat of our own drum to some extent. And I think this is where the role of purpose comes in. It gives you an anchor on which to base your, whether or not you are really doing well. Like you can measure certain KPAs, KPIs, but our purpose is what keeps us honest. And our purpose says we want to be inspiring and inclusive. Our purpose says we are building a shared values ecosystem. Our purpose has defined for us what are the things that are important to us. And if we're not doing that, then it doesn't matter who you compare yourself to. if you're not truly yourself and authentic to yourself, then like, yeah. So we are our own benchmark at this stage. But we are often inspired by, you know, in the art space, we're inspired by local design. We're inspired by young creators and young artists. In the sustainability space, we're inspired by the fact that, you know, climate change is real, okay? And property developers are notoriously bad at responsible development. So we're inspired by the discourse. In skills development, we're inspired by the fact that what are the latest unemployment figures? We're inspired by that. So that is where we get our source of inspiration. And then obviously as marketers, you know, our source of inspiration is all around us. I may see a brand that's completely unrelated to our category and I'll look at it and be like, I like how they're doing that. I'm inspired by that. I'm inspired by this conversation with you. So, you know.
One of the things, I mean, just to double back on some of these things, also because, I mean, I've been to the waterfront and so have many other people. I see this, I see and feel this sense of being inspired by the arts. I see and feel this sense of being inspired by the creative community, and not just creative in the sense of only, you know, being an artist and a painter and working in the creative industry, but also creative in the sense of food, because, you know, I've been to, again, I've seen, you know, some of the eateries there and some of the sort of craft food offerings that are there in a way that's different to anywhere else. How then do you again communicate all of these offerings in a way that when it hits me, as the food and art offering. When it hits somebody else, it appeals to them as a potential property owner at the V&A. When it hits somebody else, they see it as an opportunity for me to start a food business at the waterfront. How do you manage all of this?
Mm. With great difficulty. Sometimes these messages are contradictory because on the one side you want to communicate the inspirational kind of big picture visionary stuff, but on the other side you kind of want to say, please come support our eateries because COVID was real and they need your support. But then again, we have historically seen these things as mutually exclusive. But then I always feel like there's an intersection point. You can be inspiring, but also like deliver on the very real and measurable and like tangible messages. We're lucky in that we are quite clear on, from a visitor perspective, who our bullseye is. We are here to pitch our messaging and to pitch our storytelling and our story doing, because it's both, to a local audience. We are for, yes, we are for the global community, but where we've landed our sweet spot is, does the work that we do, is it a mirror of the beauty of the local environment? And that's where we pitch our messaging, because trying to be all things to all people is, it's a recipe for disaster. From a tenant perspective, we pitch our messaging also in the context of shared values, but without losing the fact that if you are choosing to open a business and an office, there are certain hygiene things that you will be looking out for. And our hygiene factors are the fact that we are safe. We, again, going back to being privately owned, means that we have full autonomy over the facilities within this precinct. So we Right. have complete empowerment to make sure that it's clean, it's safe. We are tackling waste in a responsible way, that when you walk the property, it's primarily pedestrianized. This precinct there's only like 26% of it that's been developed. The rest is pedestrianized spaces. Mm-hmm. So the mm-hmm. sense of creating a sense of belonging for people who work here is part of our core value proposition. And we know these are important things to our community, because they've told us, and it's tried and tested, and it's the thing that makes us distinct. So we know where to pitch ourselves to that cohort. And we also are learning a lot more about the right channels to use to communicate. We're not a brand with big budgets. That's even why the marketing achievement thing was a big thing for us, because, I can tell you with good authority, our budget is probably a percentage of what most big brands have, but working together with our community and layering and the sum of the parts and just overall resourcefulness and creative problem solving, we managed to reach our messaging in a very targeted way, because we literally cannot afford to go big, but it's a work in progress.
In some of our past episodes with heads of agencies, with people who work in that space, they talked about the value of trust between the client and the agency, especially in getting compelling work out there, work that is, of course, as compelling as your value proposition to all of your audiences. Because again, like you've said, there's no sort of best practice that says do this or that. So in that way, you are very much breaking new ground in very many instances. And for that to happen, you do work with agencies and you do work with partners, right? So from the client side, how do you build this trust in a way that it keeps you relevant to your partners and to your various audiences? How do you cultivate that trust between yourself and your agent, the agencies that you work with?
Sure. Number one, don't be a jerk.
Okay.
Like, don't be a client who's a jerk. Like, treat people with respect and dignity.
Sure.
Number one, the balance of power as clients is often in our favor. So there is very little need to be asserting your power in an irresponsible way. Like, treat people with respect and dignity across the board, irrespective of who they are. It's just the thing for me. It's like, it's my own thing. It's like, just don't be a jerk. Okay, so that's the first thing. The second thing is for us, we look at our marketing value chain in a very kind of democratized way. We try and do as, because we don't have the, not primarily because of this, but part of the, part of the core reasons why we got to this point is because we don't really have the budgets to have big creative agencies on a lead creative agency model. In a weird way, that's been a blessing for us because it's allowed us to democratize our supply chain and to apply the philosophy of the business as a shared values business into our marketing value chain. So what that means is that depending on the project or the campaign or the initiative and where it is steered, given the diversity of audiences, you will rarely ever find a partner that is one size fits all. So right. We try and do things as much internally. But where we either do not have capacity or we do not have the right competencies or capabilities, or where there's a specific need that we do not have, that's where we use our partners to augment, to add to where, to reach where we cannot reach and do and have the knowledge and the insight and the IP that we do not have. So it's very right. intentional who we partner with. But above all else is that values, like the don't be a jerk thing is actually about values. Is there an alignment in terms of values? Does the partner, and I use partner quite specifically because we don't always work with traditional agencies. Sometimes we go direct to the freelance artist or that depending on the budget. Sometimes we go direct to the crafter or the maker. Because there's that need and we know what that need is. Sorry, I lost my train of thought, but basically we really do see it as a partnership of mutual benefit, because I like to think that by virtue of us collaborating with this artist or this agency or this partner or this designer or whatever, they should be something that they need to walk away from the project feeling fulfilled, feeling respected, and that they actually got some value out of it beyond, in addition to the financial.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does. It does. It does. I think the only part that that I'm sort of wondering about is in those instances where you, in some instances, create the capacity in-house, build it in-house, and then find a partner, how do you cultivate that trust for sort of, call it big, creative, unique ideas to come in from a partner, outsider's sort of perspective? Because I guess that's kind of one of the things that, you know, some of the heads of agencies have said to us, that the reason we did this piece of award-winning work, not that being award-winning is that massive. It's really about being compelling. That the reason we got to this point where we created this kind of compelling work is because we were trusted with a big creative idea in a way that the client felt they couldn't achieve or do it themselves, you know. So how do you then cultivate it when you are building capacity in-house to then also have that kind of trust that you have with the agencies?
Yeah, so I feel that goes back to the intentionality behind why you are bringing them on board. If you are bringing a partner on board simply because you are outsourcing because you don't want to do it yourself, I believe
kind of
strategy
mark,
needs.
Yeah.
So if you're choosing a partner because you love what they do. So yes. When we think about partners, I mean, we literally work with interior designers to help us come up with our campaigns. They're not marketers, but they understand design. That's their passion. So they are pouring themselves into the project because they can see that we are actually, there's a value add to this.
Right.
Dinyiko is not an interior designer. So I can't really, I might have a vision, like I want it to be but I didn't study interior design. So there's already a, like, I don't have that knowledge. I don't have that experience.
Yeah.
And I'm this is for you to guide me through it.
Absolutely.
I'm trusting you, or by virtue of reaching out to you, I've seen your work. I trust your work. I can't do it myself. So yeah, so that's why it has to be so like intentional. I keep going back to intentional. It's not just about duplicating what's already in-house. It's bringing in something that we don't have in-house to fill the, we have 50%, we have the other 50%. We'll make 150 because of the magic of the collaboration and mutual respect.
And I'm getting this also, the sense that you also, I guess, seek a very, I think, clear insider, for lack of a different expression, insider insight around an industry, around an offering, around a creative execution. That's so that's where you kind of bring in that element of trust and cultivate it that way.
100%. So just to add on to that, it's more than just the creative. It's the values, and that through the line kind of shared values thing. Like in the values of your principles as this designer, and let's use the interior designer thing. Do you work with young artists? Do you work with local crafters? Do you, is that already in your, is that something that you are, is that already a passion point for you? Because then we are aligned, then the spark exists. I think it, because we don't see the work, the marketing work we do is, it's not just, like I said, the storytelling, it's the story doing. I want to ensure that if someone just digs below the surface for, and wants to understand, how did you create this campaign? That there's a real, authentic, sincere, responsible, and ethical story to tell. That, yes, we worked with these people. This is how much they were remunerated. This is how they were treated. This is how they were allowed to collaborate. This is the access to the rest of the waterfront market that we allowed. This is how we profiled them and created exposure. I want there to be all the way through the supply chain and the value chain, we must live the purpose. It needs to show up even in the things that don't show off to the world.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
One of the things that you also take as seriously as I think, as as all these other aspects of the work that you've just spoken about, is your CSR offering as the VNA. Can you talk me through that, especially Solve as an offering, what it is and what it's meant to achieve? Because I find that very inspiring, because again, it's one of these things where you're not just talking as a marketer, you're actually walking the talk, and you're actually living that purpose through and through, whether it's something that contributes to the bottom line for the business, or something that is contributes to sustainability, and this thinking of yourself as a brand contributing in a community.
Yes. The beauty of us having full autonomy over the resourcing and the way in which we run this public space is that we also have the space and the latitude to test and kind of incubate ideas and almost start prototyping how to run a smart, ethical, well-run city. and these are... There are issues that a lot of probably South African and African cities, or even global cities, face, whether it's waste, water, sewage, traffic and congestion, sustainability, climate change. But we're in this contained space that we can actually start prototyping what is the solution to that. We also have the power and the equity of the waterfront brand that we can convene people who historically might have had contradictory or maybe competitive interests to come and solve for universally applicable problems. And that's what something like Solve is. It's basically an acknowledgement that we're all facing the same challenges, you know, not just as businesses, but as communities, as people within communities, as stakeholders within South Africa, as stakeholders within the global community. Yet we're all operating in these little silos to try and solve for our own little world. Imagine if we could create clusters of prototyping potential solutions that we collectively come up with here at the waterfront and then see how we scale it up. So Solve is about solving universally applicable problems that impact neighborhoods. We've defined the kind of neighborhood we want to be. We want to be inspiring. We want to be as inclusive. We want to be inclusive. We want to be an example of how a well-run neighborhood could look like. But that we cannot do in our own little bubble. We've got to convene the various voices, even with the food. I mean, you spoke about your engagement and interaction with some of our eateries. We know that they are the food system is to some extent broken. We want to look at ways of solving for the food waste challenge, of solving for people or democratizing the ability for small food entrepreneurs to get into the industry, because it's sometimes really difficult to get into. But those are universally applicable things that there are pockets of people who talk about it, and they are very passionate activists in the space. And we can be a platform to allow for those voices to help solve for those issues and use the whatever influence that the waterfront has. I'm not saying we are the most influential, but in our little world, we've got some impact. Use our impact to create that platform to solve for these issues and then think through how we scale them up.
That makes perfect sense. And it is really, really inspiring because with a lot of course, with a lot of shopping and a lot of these experiences that we have, there are certain issues or areas that surround those. And it's very inspiring to see that you are once again intentional about it. And I think intention comes in a lot in the kind of work that you do and the kind of thinking with which you deliver the work. One of the things, Dinyuko, that you're passionate about, which we've spoken about quite a bit, and I mean, I saw your you know, a LinkedIn post around your nomination into this Market of the Year award as well. You talk a lot about doing work and creating work that matters, creating work that is contextual, creating work that is not gimmicky. One of the things I think that I've heard you say in another interview was the fact that you don't want to see, you know, you don't see the point of fake snow and tinsel when you're in Africa and it's, of course, warm and it never snows here, kind of thing, you know. So, I mean, that's just one example. How do you bring that passion for contextual work into your messaging at the V&A? Do you feel like you guys are able to achieve that, are coming up with those kinds of ideas, especially since we still see reindeers in shopping malls in South Africa in December every year? How are you achieving that and making sure that you live up to that purpose?
Sure. I think that question can best be answered through the last 42 minutes of this conversation. We do that through everything that I've just shared. Honestly, it's been clear in terms of our why. They've been very targeted and focused on the who, looking at the community in its entirety. It's not just about footfall and visitors coming here. It's about how you make people feel. It's about how we are shifting away from this traditional transactional tenant landlord relationship that most property developers are synonymous with. It's about acknowledging that, you know, if you want to be purpose-led, to bring purpose into action, you can't hide from the dysfunction and the discourse. You have to, if you really are truly sincere about it, you have to look at it in the face and say, you know, where can I bring hope? And by virtue of being an inspirational, of pursuing this vision of being this an inspiring neighborhood, that means we have to be purposeful. And that means acknowledging the challenges that the world faces, and then looking for hope and then doing things authentically. You know, I know that's a buzzword, like purpose, authenticity, intentional. I'm using all the buzzwords. I'm so sorry to your listeners.
No, absolutely not. I think it shows in the work you do. So it's evident in the work that you do, or in how we experience the work that you do, be it as shoppers or patrons at the V&A, we see it, you know, we feel it. I mean, I've also worked out of one of the collaborative workspaces at the V&A, as a freelancer, as a creative mind, as a strategist. I've worked there. So we see it. So I think the fact that you are confirming it with, that it is intentional, and you do that with the purpose of achieving what people experience, makes a lot of sense to me.
What I will say, though, is that it's a journey and we're not perfect. So, you know, there's many mistakes that we make along the way, always done. There's times where we've got tripped up and we haven't, you know, the vision and the intention didn't really show up in the way that we had hoped it would be. But those are all losses that I see as allowing us to continue to do better. So this is not to say that we've created the perfect formula. All I can say is that for the most part, it's done with the best of intentions. I know I represent people who are very passionate about social change. And we continue, like I said earlier, the work continues. It's never done. Yeah. There's right now I can think of multiple spaces and pockets of this neighborhood that I'm like, oh, we need to give some attention to that. That's not showing up in the way that is best representative of this vision. So the work continues, but I guess that's the beauty of this beautiful brand.
Absolutely. In closing, just lastly, what are your thoughts on what makes effective collaboration, one between the client and agency, as well as, you know, within, because there are three pockets in which I feel collaboration works well, with you and your team and how you and your team work around it. So the one is a client agency part. The other is collaboration within the team itself. And the other, of course, bit of collaboration that I'm seeing working is the collaboration between your team and the tenants or people who are part of the neighborhood. What's the value of having all of these parts, these collaborative bits, work together in crafting messaging that is really compelling?
The value of it is impact. It allows you to get your message out, the storytelling, story doing out with greater impact, because the impact comes from the sum of the parts. This greater than the whole, that whole thing. And we actually do need, from a brand reach perspective, collaboration is essential for us because we don't do above the line. Like, we are not an above the line brand. We cannot afford it. And so our message needs to reach people in a very, natural, organic way. And that has to be done through the waterfront community, through not just the tenants, through the visitors who we see as ambassadors, through waterfront staff who are actual ambassadors of the brand. We all wear the waterfront uniform with the big logo on it, and they're out on the property, landscaping, cleaning, security. They are all representatives of this brand. That's how we reach our audience. But that requires a collaborative mindset, which means democratizing and being transparent with information, sharing the news, taking people along for the journey, and leaning on each other's strengths versus like competing unnecessarily. And don't be a jerk.
That's a great point to close on. Thank you very much, Dinyiko. That was a very inspiring conversation. And I look forward to following your work and, you know, to coming to the V&A and seeing all of this inspiration come through. Thank you very much for the time.
Once again, thank you so much for having me and thank you for your time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.